D2. Number 3B.
There is no diverse. There is a universe. So there is not the universe of order and a universe of disorder. There is not the universe of harmony and a universe of disharmony. There is no diverse and no multiverse. There is a universe. That's all there is. So that which can make of the belief of a diverse and a multiverse a universe is science, scientific understanding. And science is that which will culture our consciousness, I don't say our thought, which cultures consciousness to that extent where it can do without science. I was quite impressed lately by reading various books how leading thinkers stress now this very point. You know, when I went to the university, one was feeling, well, science is just the climax of everything, you know. There is nothing higher than science. Finally, we have come out of superstition and belief and mythology and I don't know what. Science was that climax of everything. We couldn't think of anything higher than the structure of science. Today, we read books and books, and everywhere comes in that sense, there is something higher than science. I was reading a book of a professor of physics, and after he has shown what physics is and so on, he said, but science is only a path, not the aim. And we must reach that aim through science, but past science. And the textbook to me is nothing else but showing the path through science to the one being. It isn't showing the aim of science, but using science as a path, as a way. I'm the way to the one being. I don't know if you have read just before the moon business was on. Sorry, I call it that way. That great magazine, American magazine Life, was asking outstanding thinkers of various fields if they would write an article of what they are thinking about landing on the moon. And among others, they asked Charles Lindbergh. And you know, Charles Lindbergh was a hero at that time. But he is a man who is very much interested in life, in man, in being, and that he lives a bit a retired life as a scientist because he was a bit fed up with humans. And he wrote a marvelous article. And in that article, among others, he said that he is not going to say anything about landing on the moon because that's not so interesting. It's just a sign on the way, just a point on the way where we are going. He said, just as we have come out of the age of superstition into the age of science, we will come out of the age of science into a completely new age. And he said, going to the moon and afterwards making program to going to Venus and Mars and Jupiter and so on, it's just stretching the arm a little further. It's just extrapolating one development a little further with much more precision, with much more intricacies and so on. But it's not really something new. He said, the new is coming, where we go to the moon without the rocket, where we go to the stars without the body. Somehow the time comes, we may smile, but he is right. He's right. See, the trouble of the human mind is this, that it is educated to think in a linear form, to follow a line and then think, if I'm there, with some effort I can get a bit further in that line, and then still a bit further in that line, and still a bit further in that line. Well, it's just extrapolating one line instead of breaking the line and going out to quite a different line. Well, 60 years ago, the brother Wrights hopped for about 400 yards or so with the first aeroplanes. Within 60 years, that line has been pushed further and further, so to say, to the moon and back, to the Mars and back. But that's one line. But there must come a break, a complete break, where a completely new line is taken up, just as the brothers Wright took up a new line. Instead of walking or going on horseback, or with the train, he said, let's fly. That was a new line. He started a completely new line. And all that happened afterwards was a wonderful extrapolation and prolongation of that same arm. But nothing really of a mutation new. But what you read today of those physicists who have a metaphysical leaning, a philosophical leaning, you know, they all say something completely new is coming. Well, that's what is bound to happen. We must see that our evolution is never a straight line. Evolution has always been a breaking of a straight line and starting from scratch on a completely new basis. It was always those breaks, those mutations, which were necessary. What did mankind make to mutate out of a magic consciousness into a mythological consciousness? Nobody told it to do it. What made suddenly man mutate out of a mythological consciousness into a scientific logical consciousness? No human has decided, now, from tomorrow on, we are going to change our consciousness and we are going to find something new. It broke upon them. And so, the same thing will have to happen, sooner or later, with mankind, that a complete mutation of consciousness must break in. Therefore, let's see that even if we are still very deeply engaged in seeing being as signs, that the time is coming, and is bound to come, where we pass science. Well, that's that. Now, let's take another point. If we consider that chart in those four levels, then we must see that we have no preference for one of those levels. You mustn't think, well, the level of science, that's really the top, and we can discard the other ones. Or I have a preference for the level of divine science, that's jolly nice. Oh, I left behind me that level of absolute Christian science and Christian science. There is no preference. A globe or a sphere is a sphere. There is no preference on that sphere. See, there's no preference on that sphere. So, again, there you can see that the identity of that globe has multiform levels. It is not just one form. Jesus, as Mrs. Eddy explains him, was all four levels. She says of him that he was the most scientific man that trod the globe. Level of science. She said Jesus was a natural divine scientist. So he was a divine scientist. She said that Jesus demonstrated the Christian science absolutely. An absolute Christian scientist. And she says of him that Jesus was a Christian, the first Christian scientist. So he was a Christian scientist. So here we have again one in multifarious forms of the same identity of being. And in the same way, I think we have to be clear that we are not going to have a preference for one of those levels. It's a whole. If we have inwardly a preference of one level, we split up the universe into a diverse. We split up the one consciousness into many different watertight departments of consciousness. What these levels do is that they just accentuate a certain tone that they accentuate what is called the categorical novum. I don't know if you know that term novum from the Latin novus, new. It just accentuates something new which the other levels have not accentuated. But that does not mean that the other levels don't have it. It's just the accent that is stressed. Just as we have God, and then we said, well, we define God through the seven synonymous terms, but still seeing that mind is God. Mind just accentuates God in a certain way. Spirit accentuates God in another way, but it's still God. Mind is not the seventh of God, and spirit is not the second seventh of God. It's God, but it accentuates a characteristic, a novum, something new, which one hasn't considered before. On the levels, we have always the four, which we know already as the Word, as the Christ, as Christianity and science, leading back to the Word, having a spiritual circuit. And so they are the categories of the levels. A level is always a horizontal line which cuts the verticals on the same altitude. That's why I like to call those four aspects of science, levels of science, because they cut the verticals on the same equilibrium state of thought. Now, if we have, therefore, four levels, that is, four classifications and four categories, these levels always have in itself different laws. God is infinite, and therefore his laws are infinite. There is not just one law of God. The identity has a multifarious form. So law has a multifarious forms of law. And therefore, again, we must see that we don't say, well, this is a lower law, this is a higher law. It is always a law adapted to the state of consciousness which we accentuate in a practical experience. For instance, on the level of Christian Science, we have the law of causality. Mind is the cause of all. Mind is the cause of all effect. It deals with the law of causality in the mortal, which says mortal mind is the law of all disease. So here we have the laws of divine causality dealing with the laws of mortal causality. That law of causality is overformed or supraformed, whatever we may call it, on the level of absolute Christian Science as the law of spontaneity. There, suddenly, we are no more asking about cause leading to effect, but it is the law of spontaneity, where origin becomes presence. Where there is no question, we have this cause, therefore it must lead to this effect. It's a higher law, if we want to call lower and higher, the higher law, it's the superformed or overformed law of the law of causality into the law of spontaneity. If we go to the next level of divine science, where divine science is that level of consciousness which deals with the oneness, we not even have spontaneity. There we have the law of omnipresence. It's no more a question of spontaneous origination. But there is no more origination. There is presence. And so we have the law of omnipresence there. Can you see how in dealing with questions and practice and discussions and whatever it is, that we begin now to feel that we don't have to correct somebody because he talks about the law of causality and reasons spiritually with cause and effect? But that we can see, yes, that's true. That's an identity of law on the level of Christian Science. But that does not exclude that that very same law is at the same time on the level of absolute Christian Science, the law of spontaneity. that it is on the level of divine science, the law of ever-presence and omnipresence. Complete different level of consciousness. And yet, one does not exclude the other. So, if we see that, we just go quickly through those four levels to see what is, in a big way, the difference between the levels. This is really a repeat of what you have in the booklets, just to renew our sense of the levels. If we start on the level of science itself, consciousness is at the point of the infinite one, where we just see there is not anything else but the infinite one. That's the one infinite being. This infinite one is indivisible. It cannot be atomized, put into the smallest parts of the whole. It always is indivisible. It is always one structure. It is therefore just being as it knows itself. Being in itself. The capital B, B with a capital B as being itself. Well, at that point, thought is not satisfied, because there is too much of the old stuff lingering in human consciousness which puts questions. And therefore, these levels of science are here to rectify those buts and whys and wherefores. And so the next level, divine science, shows that says, yes, the divine infinite one is really an infinite oneness. I am not looking just at the sphere as a sphere, as the infinite one, but I see that every part of that infinite one is one with every other part, and therefore is a combined oneness. It's that oneness where principle and idea is one. On the level of science, principle and idea is not one. On the level of science, there is just the one principle as an infinite principle. Here, we are already considering the infinite in its parts as being one, and so principle and idea is one. I begin to realize now from this point on that whatever happens in being is one with its principle. That there is nothing going to happen ever and ever and ever but the idea of principle. That whatever happened is within that oneness of the infinite one. I have no diverse, I have the universe. Therefore, here I feel a complete spiritual transparency. A complete spiritual transparency where no buts and whys is anymore asked. Where everything is clear, because if we go out from the infinite one and have no two, nothing can be unclear. There is no question, and therefore doesn't ask any questions. It is just seeing that from the infinite one comes one principle, and with it comes the infinite idea. In this On this level of divine science, therefore, all is in all. All is made manifest as the all. You cannot divide here anymore, or not yet. So that we can see that the smallest part, if we want to call it that way, is always the whole. That what we call the smallest part is not a small part, but is always the whole, reflecting the whole, and bringing out the whole. Then thought goes further and says, well, that's fine. If within that one sphere, everything is put together into oneness, I just the same would like, very definitely, how to get from one point to the other. And I begin to ask for the intricacies, the interrelationships of the infinite manifestation of the Infinite One. Here I begin to see that that diffuse sense of oneness is now becoming more definite to my consciousness. And I can calculate definite spiritual manifestations. Because my life is varied, my life is multiformous, varied, and therefore every manifestation in my life is a specific manifestation of the Infinite One, but it's specific. And that's the office of Absolute Christian Science. It makes the Infinite One specific in a case, and gives to the Infinite One a specific form of the Infinite One. It's quite terrific to see that. Therefore, Absolute Christian Science will handle specific truth, and therefore also specific errors. It is revealing the specific truth. Then, at that point, thought says, well, that's wonderful, but what does that do to any sort of error, to any sort of belief, to any sort of dream, of this illusion? And there comes the level of Christian Science, which says, well, Absolute Christian Science is translating itself to the level of Christian Science by showing how each idea is resolving a belief. Therefore, Christian Science is that level which teaches us how the One, the Infinite One, through its ideas, through its specific ideas, is resolving specific situations, specific problems. It's naturally that which then appears outwardly as an improved humanity. But I say outwardly as an improved humanity. From within the Infinite One, naturally, it is just experience. It's just the experience of the Infinite One. Looked from outside, it is what we call improving a situation, and therefore a healing of sickness or sin or anything like that. Yes, I tried to summarize these levels of thought, and you can see that they are not separate departments, that they are interlinked, that they are just accentuating something of the Infinite One. On science, on the level of science, the Infinite One accentuates that the Infinite One knows himself as the Infinite One. On the level of divine science, that Infinite One says, and you can that know that oneness as the oneness, you can know that Infinite One as the oneness of everything. And then we come to Absolute Christian Science, which says, and you can calculate a specific idea of that oneness, a specific truth, a specific manifestation of that truth. And Christian Science comes and says, and that specific truth is that truth of the Infinite One which deals with a specific belief of the human mind. So the One never leaves its oneness, but accentuates some of its operation. All right. I make a break here for about 5 minutes or so.